It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 133 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:45, where are we at in society? When stupid people double down on their stupidity, the shopping cart edition. At 6:30, when you think you're interviewing Vince Young, but it turns out to be some other random black dude, I have the audio to prove it. At 6:15, I'm chatting with magician Michael Carbonaro of the Carbonaro Effect ahead of his live show at the Paramount Theater this Sunday. In a mere seconds, I'm starting with some basketball talk, including Dan Hurley spurning the Lakers and women's basketball doing its best Tom Herman imitation. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. Well, the big sports news of the day is Dan Hurley deciding to say no to the Los Angeles Lakers after initially meeting with them on Friday, taking the weekend to think about things, ultimately deciding to return to UConn to pursue a third straight national championship. In doing so, he declines the Lakers' six-year, $70 million offer, which sounds like a lot of money and is a lot of money, although it wouldn't have made him the highest paid coach in the NBA. It would have put him up there, but sadly, as many have pointed out on Twitter and elsewhere today, would have him behind in terms of the annual average value, the likes of Tyronn Lue and also Monty Williams with the Detroit Pistons. And if you're the Lakers, you just can't do that. Perhaps he falls below Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich, although I would argue at this point that good coaches should be paid more than Greg Popovich, who is in the twilight of his career, an illustrious career, mind you, but one that seems to be hitting that sort of Bill Belichick decline. The Lakers, in a sense, lowballed Dan Hurley and made the decision a little bit easier for him to return to UConn for the foreseeable future. And this is a huge win for college basketball right now, a sport that desperately needs really good people leading the sport. And by really good people, I don't just mean good people. I mean people who know what the heck they're doing as it pertains to coaching basketball. Hurley clearly understands that, has a great handle on roster management, understands the need to have continuity on your roster while also cherry-picking guys from the transfer portal and building a sort of culture that allows for sustained success. Will not have been at all surprising to see him leave for the Lakers. I think that his demeanor, while he is maybe a little bit too hard-assed for some in 2024 at times, I think it would have played well, even at the professional ranks. Think about guys who are a little bit too hard-assed, which can work well in the college game, talking about basketball and football here, when they try and go pro, that doesn't fly anymore. I think Dan Hurley has a sort of zen-like philosophy, similar to what Phil Jackson brought to the table with the Bulls and then the Lakers, that would have led to success in the NBA. And maybe it still will at some point, but for right now, he considers there to be some unfinished business at UConn. That is a third straight national championship, which seems unheard of in this current era of basketball, with the amount of roster turnover that you get each and every offseason. I mean, even on good rosters, it feels like you're having to relearn half the team. Not all of that has to do with guys running out of eligibility. It's just there's so much player movement in this verge of college hoops to find a guy that runs counter to that, that works really hard to keep guys on his roster, to build that culture. Yes, to utilize the transfer portal, but not to overuse it, like what we see happening elsewhere. I feel like Rodney Terry is falling into a little bit of a negative cycle in this regard of having to replace entirely too much of his roster from one year to the next. It's happened in two straight off seasons now. And while it seems like he has a good group of guys coming in, like talented players that is, it takes time for guys to gel. And UConn is a great example of that. Even though it started a couple of years ago, they had a lot of continuity last year. Some people aren't as high on their roster heading into next season because they do lose a decent number of guys, but having Dan Hurley back can help to negate at least some of that. So that is the men's college basketball portion of today's opening segment, because I am going to have to talk a little bit about the women's game doing their best Tom Herman imitation. What do I mean by that? Well, Tom Herman, for those of you who were in Austin during the Tom Herman era for Longhorn football, would have these moments where he builds an immense amount of goodwill. And within a matter of, sometimes it was days, sometimes it was weeks, sometimes it was a month, it's almost like he would go out of his way to completely destroy that goodwill and put himself back to even, if not slightly in the negative, with those who follow Longhorn football the closest. That being reporters, fans, boosters, players on his roster, whoever. Well, women's basketball has an opportunity in front of it right now. A chance to really grow the game. To cement the interest of right now what may be temporary fans. To keep them on board for the long haul. As a result of the popularity of Caitlin Clark. Yes, it is just one player. But that's kind of how it goes with sports in general, but especially basketball. You can look at the men's game, and yes, it turns into a negative over time, but the men's game was able to grow like it was because of its ability to market individuals. Bird and Magic. No better example than Michael Jordan, obviously. And with Caitlin Clark, the WNBA and women's basketball has that chance. Games being played by Caitlin Clark are being watched at triple the level of any other WNBA game right now. You ask anybody who knows the game, it does seem like Caitlin Clark is going to be a future star in this league, just like she was in college basketball these last couple of years. I am not a fan of women's basketball. Nothing against the women. It just has more to do with a low threshold that I have to add any additional sports in my life right now. But I can still recognize when something is happening and it is being handled in the worst way possible. And that's what women's basketball seems to be doing. I get it that rookies have to deal with their lumps. There's going to be some hard knocks there. It may feel unfair at times, but eventually Caitlin Clark will get over that hump. She's able to remain patient and keep a fairly level head. Eventually, she will be the one that gets the calls, much like happens with stars in basketball on the men's side, and yes, the women's game too. But what am I talking about specific to women's basketball right now? It has to do with Caitlin Clark, at least as of right now, being left off of the U.S. women's team roster for the upcoming Olympics, the Paris Games, which start a little bit later on this summer. There is no player on the roster right now that is as young as Caitlin Clark would be, which is 22. I believe the youngest player on the roster is either 25 or 26, but that's beside the point. You want to provide somebody like that with the experience of being on the team, even if her minutes are limited. And we're hearing from sources behind the scenes that part of the reason why they don't want to put her on the roster is to disappoint or upset anybody who sees her on the roster but doesn't see her playing heavy minutes. What a cowardly idea to hide behind. What, do you not want to upset anybody else who's currently on the roster? Is that part of it? Because if so, just go ahead and say that. But you're doing yourself a disservice, even amongst those who may be upset or frustrated if they tune into a women's basketball game during the Olympics and don't see Caitlin Clark out there to gain new fans based on the performance of some of the other star players in your league. But that's not happening right now, and it's a shame because women's basketball is squandering a phenomenal opportunity a la Tom Herman. All right, coming up, I am spending the segment with magician Michael Carbonaro of the Carbonaro Effect. He's bringing his live show to Austin this Sunday at the Paramount Theater. And I'm going to talk with Michael prior to that here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Michael Carbonaro is a longtime magician who is best known for the True TV show, The Carbonaro Effect, which had 5 seasons and is currently available on Hulu. Well, for a number of years now, he's been taking that act on the road, and that currently includes the Lies on Stage tour, which is stopping here in Austin this weekend, Sunday night at the Paramount Theater, the Lies on Stage tour with Michael Carbonaro. It is a 7 o'clock show, and you can go to one of 2 places to snag tickets, either Michael's website, michaelcarbonaro.com, or the Paramount Austin's website, austintheater.org. And Michael is now nice enough to join me to talk magic and more. Michael, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Trey. How are you?
I am great, and I am excited because I get to take my family to the Paramount Theater for the very first time this Sunday. My wife and I have seen shows there before, but my 9 and 7-year-old have not been to this historic venue, nor have they had the opportunity or joy of getting to see a really good magic show. But you're not only going to provide some magic, but also a lot of comedy as well. So first off, thank you for giving me a good excuse to get my entire family downtown this weekend.
Oh, no, you got it. I absolutely love that. I can't tell you the number of times I'll ask on tour, you know, I go to these fantastic theaters like the Paramount, and I'll ask, like, how many of you, this is your first time here? And I can't believe the hands that go up, and it's like, what an honor to get to be the one to bring them there. So you bet. And your kids will probably think that that's my palace, you know? Like, I don't know how old they are, but sometimes kids will be like, this is Michael Carbonaro's, you know, castle.
You have the unique ability to really get to the heart and soul of people who are a variety of age ranges, whether you're talking about the grandparents in the crowd or the kids in the crowd and the parents in between, of course. What's the secret there? Because that is very difficult to cater to those different age groups all at once.
Yeah, that's my favorite kind of audience, because you get to operate on lots of different levels at the same time. And you have, you know, the adults are kind of smirking at something I said, and the kids don't know, and the kids laugh at the kids' stuff, and everyone laughs together. They start laughing at each other, laughing. I think the secret to that was, man, you know, I grew up on Long Island, and I was a performing magician, like, all through my early teens, like, literally performing for birthday parties and communions, christenings. And I had to be in front of that audience at once. You know, I was never the babysitter magician. Like, my show isn't a kiddie show. It's not like an adult show. It's really for everyone. So I think just, you know, like, when I was just pounding the pavement, learning how to be an entertainer, it was in front of those groups, and you just sort of channel that. And that's my favorite kind, like the Johnny Carson kind of ability to just be playing for everyone.
I think it's also interesting that you're not only a big fan of stand-up, there is stand-up in your past. You won a stand-up comedy competition back in New York many years ago, and you really approach your live shows from a similar mindset to stand-up comedians too, where you're constantly tinkering with things. Something that may seem to work one night doesn't necessarily work the next night, even if you do it the exact same way. So you're having to be very mindful of the crowds as well. Have you talked with stand-up comedians about how they go about their process and helping to improve your own?
Oh yeah. I mean, it all is stand up. It really is. Like, I still venture into the world of playing stand up. Sometimes I'll jump up secretly around a club in LA and just sort of hone my stand up skills. But yeah, it really is. It's just that it's that breaking the fourth wall, like, in an environment where you're talking directly to people, but yet you kind of have an act going on. And like you said, you try something and you see what gets a laugh, and you hone it in, and then you go, oh, I think I've got it. And then you go and do it, and it doesn't work again. You're like, wait, what? And it's the crowd. Sometimes it's the crowd, sometimes it's you. But like this tour right now, Lies on Stage, which I've gotten to do this one in little parts back and forth, like, all the way since right when the world shut down 2020. But, you know, this show is so on fire right now because I've performed so many dates with it, and like, all the jokes are there, all the moments are there. It's perfect. It's like, it's really at a great state. And that's usually the time when it's like, oh, now we're starting to think about tapering off to a next tour, like, you know, in 2025. Like, so it's like, as soon as it's great, you're like, all right, see ya.
You admit that you that while you love Magic, you have a little bit of a love-hate relationship with Magic. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. Oh, man. You're going full Barbara Walters today. Yeah, I do. Because, you know, I grew up and really wanted to, like, be seen as an all-around entertainer. And sometimes magician, someone hears magician and they think, like, your dumb uncle doing a coin trick or something, like, yeah, silly clown or something, and it seems hard to kind of crack that magician, but also a really solid comedian or like really solid entertainer or a great actor. It's like you throw a magician in there and you've like destroyed the entire thing immediately. You're wearing like a pair of glasses with a nose and a mustache and you're like honking a whoopee cushion, which I do. But yeah, so sometimes I feel like it can be a roadblock. It's been the one thing that's like really gotten me through the door in so many situations, from like getting into NYU, from like getting on to the Tonight Show and having my own TV show. So I love Magic, but sometimes there's that little like, oh, I'm being seen as like a magician, which is kind of a bad word sometimes. So I hope that through my work and my show that actually helps make like Magic something that's not that. But yeah, it does get me sometimes when you're trying to, like out here in Hollywood, trying to get into like a movie or a TV show. It's like, oh, the magician? It's like.
Wait, how did it help you get into NYU?
I did a trick at my audition and my meeting. I think maybe like, you know, the allure of me, and maybe I'm just like not giving myself credit for like doing a great job at the audition or whatever, but I also like in the meeting kind of like, was like, you know, and I'm also a magician, and I like did a trick, and the guy was like, what? And then I like got in, and I'm like, they must have been the trick. It was Sponge Bunny Rabbit that got me into NYU. It wasn't my grades.
There's actually an interesting conversation going on in the world of comedy right now that has to do with whether the idea of politically correct is good or bad for comedy. Jerry Seinfeld came out a couple weeks ago saying PC is bad for comedy. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus, his former Seinfeld co-star, came out over the weekend, I want to say, and said, actually, PC is good. It forces you to really reassess what is actually funny at a given point in time. So something that may have been funny 10, 20 years ago is not as funny now for, I guess, obvious reasons, depending on the subject. You think PC is a good or bad idea as it pertains to comedy?
Yeah, it's a tricky subject, and I don't think there's a black or white answer there, because there's this bizarre thing sometimes you see in comedy where, or, you know, even in the world of entertainment where, you know, you'll hear, oh man, he gets away with that, or oh, she can pull that off. And there's just some people that it's not just the words you're saying or the premise of the joke that needs to be examined. It's the whole package. You know, someone who has this sort of general kindness and joy, and we love them and know them, they could sort of play with something that might get a little too edgy, but yet we just know that it's coming from that place. And then you can take that same joke or concept and give it to someone else, and it's gross and dark and like mean and questionable and cancelable. So there's really no way to say. I think people like look to come up with some kind of like, we have to have a rule and a structure. What can you say? What can't you say? And once you start going down there, it can be really hindersome for people. I definitely notice even in my own work, like sometimes I'll say something and I'll be like, wait, I have to like go ask, like, is that going to be like too weird? Is that like an okay joke? It's a little bit like on edge, but like funny, like the parents will laugh, and like, just in this landscape, social landscape, is that going to be like a tiny little same thing with when you go on and do a comedy show, someone watches the whole comedy show and then they record one like sentence and then they post that one sentence, like, look what this person said. And you're like, you're missing the whole picture here that got us there, or why that was ironically being said, or what. It's very tough. So I definitely, what I do notice is that it, so yes, the answer is yes, it can be good, because maybe it'll clean up some people who shouldn't be saying and doing the things that they're doing. And then on the other side, it does kind of like, you know, once you're hesitating in your work, oh man, as a comic or as an entertainer, it's all about like the spontaneity and the riding, you know, with the impulse. So like once you're like putting up these little roadblocks, it can be damaging to your freedom as an entertainer. So I've seen that. I stumble around sometimes too. But so I don't think there's any hard and fast answer to that. And it's definitely, you know, I guess worth talking about, but you can't make any rules.
So one more time for people who are maybe thinking right now, come on, you got to act, folks, austintheater.org, but are thinking about going and seeing the show on Sunday, but haven't exactly pulled the trigger yet.
Yeah.
Any other reason or a particular joke that they might be interested in learning about right now that will ultimately get them to buy tickets to go see you on Sunday night?
Well, if you have literally come down this far into the interview and you're not going to go see the show, I don't know what I could say. Sounds like you're interested. It's a great show. It, like we've been saying, it's fun for everyone. I do make two people from the audience disappear on stage, which is really cool, whether you're in the crowd or whether you're the one who gets to disappear. So maybe that'll tip the scales from someone who's sitting with their mouse hovering over the buy tickets button. It's a great time. So I'd love to see you down there.
I thought you were going to say at first you make two people in the audience cry, which also would have been an interesting reason to come see the show. But disappear is pretty cool, too.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I don't know what you mean, but okay. Yeah, I bring two people up from the audience and punch them in the gut, and we all laugh at them as they cry. No, what? move to tears or punch to tears? Who knows? No, what? They disappear.
One of the two. He is Michael Carbonaro. Check out his website, michaelcarbonaro.com. It's where you can also buy tickets if you don't go to austintheater.org. Michael, thank you so much for the time today. Safe travels to and from Austin this weekend.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Trey. See ya.
Cool. Coming up at 6:45 and where are we at in society? When stupid people double down on their stupidity, the shopping cart edition. And coming up next, when you think you're interviewing Longhorn legend Vince Young, but it turns out to be some other random black dude. We have the audio to prove it here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Have you ever accidentally mistaken somebody for somebody else? It happens. I've been on both the giving and receiving end of this mistake. I guess I just have one of those faces, and I also have a poor memory. There have been a few times where I'm like, oh, it's you, so-and-so. Oh, wait, no, it's not. Now, thankfully, for me, as somebody who has been in broadcasting for decades now, I don't think it has ever happened on the air, or if it has, I have buried that deep within my subconscious. Hopefully it never resurfaces, although these things rarely never resurface. Unfortunately, the same cannot be said for a recent Golf Channel broadcast that saw the reporter play a game of wrong black dude involving or not involving lifetime Longhorn and legendary college football figure Vince Young. It was during the Golf Channel's coverage of the BMW Charity Pro-Am in South Carolina, which happened over the weekend, but the coverage on Thursday did include reporter Lauren Withrow. Sorry, Lauren, I have to throw you under the bus here. Thinking she was interviewing Vince Young, but it turned out to be some other random black dude. Take a listen. In case you missed that, oh, we're not done just yet. In case you missed that, the gentleman being interviewed apologized, what a courteous gesture by him, and corrected Lauren by saying, you have the wrong person. I'm Everett Sands, assistant football coach with the Citadel. And so at that point, he doesn't have much else to say because she had directed a question to Vince Young, this clearly not Vince Young. What does young Lauren do? Does she embarrassingly apologize and throw it back to the main broadcast? No. She just keeps the microphone in front of his face, forcing him to say more words before she herself thinks it's a good idea to ask another question. So let's hear just how awkward that was.
But The thing is, the great thing about golf is that I'm not only competing against myself, but I'm competing against everybody else.
This is your first pro-am ever played, and what's the best part of being out here?
Well, being out here is a great thing, and having the opportunity to play with some professional golfers is a intimidating thing, but also a great thing.
Good luck this weekend.
Hey, I appreciate it.
Poor Lauren. Terrible situation to find herself in. She was probably frozen there for a second, so you have to give Everett a little bit more credit for continuing to expand. He actually answered the question that she asked, and he wasn't long-winded, of course, nor should he have been, but he gave her a little bit more time to regroup, and all she could come up with was, how is it being out here for the very first time? I guess that's better than nothing. She probably should have just pitched it back to the main broadcast at that point, though. Yikes. That one's going to sting for a while, Lauren. You may want to take a better look at Vince Young the next time you think you're approaching Vince Young. Or maybe just walk up and introduce yourself and say, hey, I'm Lauren Withrow of the Golf Channel. And let them introduce themselves back, even if you think you know who it is. The courteous thing to do there, and I would assume that Everett is this courteous since he showed an extreme amount of courtesy in that off-kilter conversation, to say, hey, I'm Everett Sands, assistant coach with the Citadel. And at that point, you avoid the embarrassment. There's a bizarre embarrassment that seems to be shaping up in the National Football League. As we're all well aware now, the NFL is kicking off week one of the regular season in a number of ways, and that includes a first international broadcast in South America. That's right. I believe it's on that first Friday night. You're going to have the Eagles and Packers squaring off in Brazil. And we got a report, I want to say a month ago, that the league had encouraged, or discouraged, I should say, fans who were traveling down to Brazil for the game from wearing the color green. Well, on a recent podcast, new Packers running back Josh Jacobs also mentioned that they had been told not to wear the color green when they were down in Brazil.
I got to ask you, you're going to open the season against my Eagles down in Brazil, man. What are you most excited about?
You know, they said that the part of Brazil we go into, you can't even wear green at.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
They said, like, I guess something to do with the gangs and stuff.
Oh, dude, Eagles. I'm not going.
Eagles fans.
They said, we're not going to Rio. They told us, they was like, man, it's one of them places where they probably won't even let us leave.
A full team.
Oh, damn, I'm not going, dude. No.
Eagles and I was Green Bay.
Oh, green. That's
wait,
what color?
Yeah, what color I was, green?
And they probably going to have, like, armored vehicles following us. I said, bro, why are we out here?
First of all, from a technical standpoint here, the podcast is hosted or co-hosted by former NFL player Chris Long. Chris, when you have a guest on and the guest is talking, shut the hell up. It becomes a muddled mess and is very difficult to. I will never listen to your podcast because I already have established in my own head as you being somebody who isn't afraid to interrupt people. It's an impossible listen. I know there's a video feed to this podcast too, but you got to do a better job, my man. As far as Josh Jacobs' claim that it's not as simple as what the NFL is suggesting, which is the professional soccer team in Sao Paulo where this game is being played, their rival is green, therefore you don't wear green in or around the stadium out of respect for the home team, that it's more of a gang-related deal. Maybe the gangs take the green a little bit more seriously than the general public. But yikes, NFL, the fact that this is even out there now is a problem. And I know you're probably working with Sao Paulo officials to keep that violence, if the potential does exist, to a minimum. This is a bad look for you. And if you knew a month ago that green was going to be a problem, maybe you, I don't know, pick any number of teams that don't have green in their team colors to go to Brazil for this game. It's almost as if you went out of your way to find teams that have the color green in their logos to play this first game in Brazil. Because I'm looking up and down the list of NFL teams right now. AFC East, Bills, Dolphins, Jets, Patriots. You could say the Dolphins are maybe green. The Jets are certainly green. Not a green team in the AFC North. Not a green team in the AFC South. Not a green team in the AFC West. One green team in the NFC East, the Eagles. One green team in the NFC North, the Packers. No green teams in the NFC South. And arguably one green team in the NFC West. That is the Seattle Seahawks, who wear that neon green as a sort of accentuation from time to time. So how about you take this problem out of Sao Paulo and NFL fans who want to travel with their team, take it out of their hands, and you have complete ownership over this. Not that you can walk it back now because people have already started to make their travel plans, but good Lord, you needed a little bit more foresight than this to have both teams whose primary colors does include green squaring off. And no doubt the fans going down there are going to be packing at least something that has green in it too. This is rife for issues. It's going to take a pretty large bribe of these local gangs to keep something from happening. I don't know. Maybe that's the solution here. You are a multi-billion dollar corporation after all. Speaking of the NFL, the Steelers have extended head coach Mike Tomlin through the 2027 season. This news was announced a little bit earlier today. We hear it each and every year now. Mike Tomlin hasn't had a losing season since taking over the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're just a quarterback away. Are they still a quarterback away? Probably. Especially if Russell Wilson's going to be the guy to start the season. You might have a chance if Justin Fields takes over, but even then, there's no guarantees. I know Steelers fans, good friends who are Steelers fans, who, while they have an immense amount of respect for Mike Tomlin and how that organization is run, they are getting really tired of the whole never had a losing season narrative. How many of those never had a losing seasons have they actually been true competitors for a Super Bowl title? Yes, Mike Tomlin has won, but it's been far too long now. And you wonder if the Steelers are erring on the side of niceness and hamstringing their abilities to actually compete for a Super Bowl title. I don't know if the Steelers are going to be any better than they were last year. You would assume at least slightly, because Kenny Pickett is no longer there. Yeah, Mason Rudolph showed you some things, but he's gone too. You seem to be better at quarterback. It's a bit of a reload at wide receiver. That defense looks to still be good too. But if the guy on the sidelines tops out as 9-8, 10-7, maybe the occasional 11-6 season, but you're not making it past the divisional round in those NFL playoffs, what does it matter? We've talked about this with David Pierce when Kevin Dunn is on the show, and he joins me every Tuesday for the full hour. Somebody can be a nice guy, a good dude, and not the right guy for your program or your franchise. Mike Tomlin may well qualify as that in Pittsburgh right now. Really nice guy, has an excellent understanding on the defensive side of the ball, but maybe not the dude to lead you back to the promised land. All right, coming up in Where Are We At in Society, when stupid people double down on their stupidity, the shopping cart edition.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of the show means it's time for
Where Are We At in Society Today?
That's right. It is your regular look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out, but sadly, today is not that day. And boy, one of my big pet peeves in 2024, and this has been happening for far too long now. Some would argue it's been happening throughout human history, but it does seem to have accelerated over the last several years, is stupid people doubling down on their stupidity. You call somebody out for doing something that is discourteous or flat out stupid, and in return, they, I don't know, give you a middle finger, perhaps literal, sometimes figurative. And it is a figurative middle finger that is at the forefront of today's first Where We At story. There is a psychologist out in California who apparently has a decent social media following and decided to take to social media at some point in the last couple of weeks to explain why she doesn't return shopping carts to the area in the parking lot of every grocery store where you're supposed to take the shopping cart back to when you're done using it. Leslie Dobson is her name. She is a Los Angeles-based psychologist with over 300,000 followers across social media. And she took to TikTok to explain exactly why she's too good to return shopping carts to that shopping cart corral.
I'm not returning my shopping cart. And you can judge me all you want. I'm not getting my groceries into my car, getting my children into the car, and then leaving them in the car to go return the cart. So if you're going to give me a dirty look, off.
You're right, Leslie. A dirty look is clearly not enough. Something more needs to be done here to ensure that you show a certain courtesy that you're expecting out of everybody else. See, you expect everybody to show you a courtesy as somebody who's not only had to grow grocery shopping, but has had to do so with kids in tow. Oh my gosh, and you're going to have to walk an extra 20 feet to return that shopping cart to the shopping cart corral that is probably two spaces over from where your car is parked? Boo. Freaking who? And by the way, if you think this is innocuous, if you think it's harmless for the little spoiled brats that you're probably raising right now, guess what? They take cues from you. So you're raising a couple of little devils who are probably also going to make very little effort to look out for others. As a supposed psychologist who should know better than to be this. It's not even passive aggressive. It's just aggressive idiot. You are being an aggressive idiot right now. And you run the risk of raising other aggressive idiots. That's the issue here. Ridiculous. And if you're listening right now and you're laughing, you think it's funny that this is a rationale that good luck everybody else. I'm going to do what I want. And I'm going to justify it with the fact that I have kids. Kids are an excuse to do something right. For you to use kids as an excuse to do something wrong, screw you. I'll bring you another hypothetical. The hypothetical test that needs to be taken for somebody to be considered fit to be a parent. You fail it, lady. Because you're hiding behind your kids to explain your own laziness in a situation. I guarantee you, when you didn't have a single kid, you are still leaving that shopping cart in between spots rather than walking it back to the corral. Guarantee you. And now you're just crutching your kids as an excuse to do so. Complete garbage. I know I joke around on this show from time to time. This ticks me off, though. It is a level of laziness and selfishness that has become far too prevalent in society. And it's time we put a stop to it. Of course, I'm speaking tongue-in-cheek when I say something more needs to be done other than shooting a dirty look your direction. But yeah, say something. Shame this woman in public. I'm not saying get physical, of course, but shame this woman in public. Ask her, why are you so lazy that you can't walk the extra 20 feet to take that shopping cart back to the corral? Nobody wants your kids, lady. We just want you to exhibit an ounce of courtesy. Moving on now to what will be the most disgusting story that I probably read on Where We At in Society this week. Go to Florida for this one. And while it may involve Florida man is secondary to the focus of this story. A 63-year-old man was enjoying breakfast at a diner with his wife when an unusual incident occurred, as detailed in a new article published by the American Journal of Medical Case Reports. The man's colon fell out of his body after a forceful sneeze. Thankfully, surgeons have successfully placed part of his colon back into his body. Prior to the incident, the man had battled prostate cancer and underwent abdominal surgery. He had stitches removed from his abdomen on the morning that his bowel evisceration, according to this New York Post article, took place. He was at the diner with his wife to celebrate his clean bill of health. From the journal, quote, during breakfast, the man sneezed forcefully, followed by coughing. He immediately noticed a wet sensation and pain in his lower abdomen. Looking down, he observed several loops of pink bowel protruding from his recent surgical site. The man covered the exposed intestines with his shirt while his wife called for an ambulance. Paramedics who arrived at the scene noted an approximately 3-inch vertical laceration with large amounts of bowel poking through it. Thankfully, the Floridian reported little blood loss and he was rushed to a nearby medical facility. Three urologic surgeons carefully reduced the eviscerated bowel back into the abdominal cavity and also inspected the full length of the small bowel and noted no evidence of injury. They closed the abdomen with a series of figure of eight stitches. It's one of the strongest types of closures to make sure that the incision did not pop back open again. The guy was able to be weaned off of pain medications after a 6-day stay in the hospital and has since returned to normal life. Oh my goodness. The only thing that makes this story any better, and we don't know what the diner was that he was eating at with his wife, is if this had happened at a Waffle House. Because let's be honest, if this had happened at a Waffle House, it would be only like the third or fourth strangest thing to happen at that Waffle House that day. And two of those things probably involve the employees. But we are glad to hear that this guy who sneezed his colon out of his body is now back on that road to recovery. Finish off now in Tennessee, where Tennessee police are warned meth gators are a possibility if you keep flushing drugs down the toilet. A police department in Loretto, Tennessee is asking residents to refrain from flushing drugs such as methamphetamine to prevent meth gators. In a Facebook post, the Loretto Police Department wrote that on Saturday, officers executed a search warrant on a home and discovered the occupant trying to flush meth and drug paraphernalia down his toilet. The guy was unsuccessful, but the officers used the incident to remind residents of the harm drugs can cause to the environment. Quote, folks, please don't flush your drugs, okay? Our sewer guys take great pride in releasing water that is cleaner than what is in the creek, but they are not really prepared for meth. Ducks, geese, and other fowl frequent our treatment ponds, and we shudder to think what one all hyped up on meth would do. Furthermore, if it made it far enough, we could create meth gators in Shoal Creek and the Tennessee River down in North Alabama. They've had enough methed up animals in the past few weeks without our help. So if you need to dispose of your drugs, just give us a call and we'll make sure they are disposed of in the proper way. But an alligator biologist who is in the Department of Biology at, you guessed it, the University of Florida, the Gators, said he had never once heard of an alligator on meth. Quote, I've worked with alligators for over 40 years and I generally can answer any question one gives me about them. This one's throwing me for a loop. Asked if a gator that comes in contact with meth would become more aggressive, this alligator biologist says, I would guess that they might be affected by it. but they tend not to react to drugs in the same way we do. And I don't know if it would take a little or a lot to get an alligator to do something on meth. It's a ridiculous notion. If you flush meth, it's going to be diluted. But we do have another idea for Hollywood now. After Cocaine Bear, Meth Gator, right? Am I right? I'd watch that. I think you would too. By the way, that police department did walk back their Meth Gators comment saying, look, that was a joke. It was tongue in cheek. There may not really be Meth Gators, but don't flush your drugs down the toilet. It's bad for the water supply. It's bad for the wildlife, even if it's not creating Meth Gators. And that is it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. A couple of programming reminders for later this week. Tomorrow, it is a Tuesday. That means I'll spend the hour with the great Kevin Dunn. Wednesday means a couple of segments with Justin Wells of Inside Texas. And stay tuned later in the week. Got a very well-known comedian that I'm speaking with, but you're just going to have to wait to find out who. And that is it for today's edition of Sports Day Plus. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow at 6. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellie.